With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. Anything worth saying is worth talking about. Deprogram with Michael Parker on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
It is hour two of Deprogram. I am your host, Michael Parker, and we will be joined in about 9 to 10 minutes by John Madeline. He has another report for us, but we'll get to that in a minute. I saw a story that goes back to our interview with Joe Bastardi yesterday, and this is something that I'm interested in, and I bring it up just as for a couple of reasons. A, it's a change of pace, but also for us to get a deeper understanding, no pun intended, because this is in deep water, but of what is really happening in the world. And I see this report that says a remote undersea volcano is likely erupting in the Pacific Ocean now, but they don't know for sure. Why do they not know for sure? Is because they get the seismic activity that is happening, but it's in such an inaccessible place that they're not positive. It goes on. Now, this is the Associated Press that was reporting this, and they reported this just a couple of days ago, but it just came across my desk today. It says a volcano is likely erupting deep beneath the Pacific Ocean in the U.S. Commonwealth of the Northern Mariana Islands. And the Northern Marianas are about almost 4,000 miles west of Honolulu, and they're adjacent to the Marianas Trench, which is the deepest place on the ocean. And this area where they think this eruption is happening is called the Ahi Seamount. It began erupting in October. So this has been going on a few weeks. And this is coming from the U.S. Geological Society, who's on top of all of these kinds of things. When we have an earthquake, those are the guys who let you know what the Richter scale reading of it is. And this particular seamount is a large conical submarine volcano. At its highest point, it's about 259 feet or 79 meters below the surface of the ocean. And it's about 11 miles or 18 kilometers southeast of this island of Falon de Perajos, also known as Yaracas. Anyway, long story short, they don't have one of their kind of sensor buoy stations close to this to get an active picture of what's going on, but they are pretty sure that based upon the readings that they are getting from gear that is a little bit farther away, that this is either a volcanic eruption, which is what they think it is, or it is a series of earthquakes. And the reason, why do I bring all this up? Well, I bring it up because it's interesting. And here again, this is something that we'll never see. This is something that the news doesn't report upon, but volcanoes are erupting in the ocean frequently, and this changes the water temperature, which then puts in force other processes as a result. So, you know, the Earth is complex. The Earth is awe-inspiring, to be totally honest, and there is energy inside the planet itself that is almost incomprehensible to us, and the way the entire Earth works is something that we just need to step back a little bit, have a little bit of humility, and understand this. And this particular area, there's a chain of 60 active volcanoes stretching over about 600 miles west and parallel to the Mariana Trench. So not only is this the world's deepest point, but it's also got 60 active volcanoes. They didn't say 60 dormant volcanoes. They said 60 active volcanoes. And it's such an inaccessible place that we can only guess that it's going off. And here in 2022, if we're just now figuring this out, think about all the times that it's happened in the past and the times that it will probably happen in the future, and we won't even know it. The Earth will be chugging along, doing its thing, expelling great deals of hot magma, natural gas, methane, CO2, whatever, into the atmosphere, into the ocean, and we won't even know about it because it's deep within the ocean. I don't know. I think it's pretty awe-inspiring. I think it's something that meteorologists and the climate science people need to understand better so that we understand where the changing climate is coming from. It does not remove our responsibility of being better stewards, but it is certainly something that we need to consider. You guys, at TNT Radio, we never go home. We are committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7, online, globally, no matter what. We got you covered here on TNT Radio.
Focused on the facts.
It's never biased.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
The U.S. Senate, those hard workers, was busy yesterday with advancing bills, resolutions, and there were even developments on the leadership front of the GOP. Here to unpack some of the emerging information is TNT News producer John Matlin.
The U.S. Senate has been busy these past few days, Michael, so let's dive right in.
Rolling their sleeves up.
They get in the shovel, getting down in the dirt, they're going.
Oh, yeah.
So on Tuesday, a resolution vote passed through the Senate to terminate the COVID-19 national emergency that was originally declared during the Trump administration and extended ever since, 2 weeks to slow the curve. The measure passed 62-36, showing a rare bipartisan success story is achievable after all. 13 Democrats voted along with Republicans to end the emergency, which has been in place since March 13th of 2020. Perhaps a sign that the Democrats are realizing indefinite COVID restrictions will hurt them in future elections. However, maybe not everyone understands this, and all the no votes were indeed that of Democrats. Two senators didn't vote at all. Republican Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska and someone who is currently still in the election cycle, Democrat Raphael Warnock of Georgia. Which, by the way, let me add, if you're a senator and you don't vote, that's kind of like me having a job at TNT Radio, and like Homer Simpson, I just let the drinking bird keep hitting the space bar. It doesn't make any sense. If you're a senator, you really, really should be voting or you should be voted out.
Yes.
Okay. So this approach of not voting could easily be to fly under the radar for Raphael Warnock as not to offend either side, leading to the runoff in December. I just see it, however, as a spineless approach that reeks of a politician just trying to keep their power. The emergency, of course, allows the administration to pay for COVID-19 vaccines and more. Thus, if the emergency measure goes the way of the dinosaur, so does the additional power that comes with it. So the White House has preemptively let the country know, even if the House approves, the man who stated the pandemic was over back in September, President Joe Biden, will indeed veto it. There is even rumor swirling that the Biden administration plans to extend the emergency past the January 2023 expiration date. So there's no end in sight. It's now 3 years to slow the curve. Another vote to discuss is a bill that passed 62-37. With bipartisan support to codify same-sex marriage. Bipartisan, again, what is happening here? Very close to the vote count of the resolution to end the COVID emergency. The bill will also add federal protections for interracial marriages. With all of this action and rare sightings of bipartisan votes, is this our chance? Can politics be changing? I don't know, because we did watch Mitch McConnell regain the GOP by the GOP minority leadership role. He's still there. So he again will spend his time leading the GOP in the Senate after all the talk about him going away from being a leader. They chose not to wait for the results of the Georgia runoff either, because if Herschel Walker wins, he now will not have a chance to vote on this leadership. Unlike Nancy Pelosi, who is stepping aside in the House, making way for a new generation, the Republicans are stuck with Mitch in the Senate, where his popularity fades at astonishing rates. Michael, how do you feel about some Senate action these days?
Well, you know, it's funny. Yesterday, my guest in the second hour, this guy, Yvon Eland, was talking about how the executive branch has got this outsized influence these days, but it's been going on for like 100 years. And oftentimes that came as a result of wars. And I pointed out to him, it's like, well, it doesn't have to be a war against a country. It could be a war against an idea. And this is what the war on COVID is, right? It's just a on-ramp for gaining more power. And of course, Biden doesn't want to let go of this. And of course, the Democrats don't want to let go of it. And it's shameful and just, it's ridiculous. I got to be honest. So on the second thing, on the marriage situation, I'm not too fussed about that on the same-sex marriage. I'll be honest, I thought that this was already a protected situation. Am I missing something here?
Yes. Yeah, so what happened was the Supreme Court ruled on it, kind of like Roe versus Wade. So they thought that after Roe versus Wade got overturned, that there would be an opportunity to go after gay marriage. So that was one of the big things that was mentioned. But they were able to codify. And people asked me while I was running, John, would you allow this to happen? Now, I didn't read this bill, so I don't know what else is in it. But on the front of protecting the right for people to get married, I don't care who gets married. You can get married to anyone
Same
you
here.
Want.
That's what I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, were there hardcore religious Republicans that did not like that when I said it? Well, yeah. But again, I was not trying to seize power by lying to people. I feel that if somebody wants to be married in life and they're not doing anything on a level to force me to partake or anyone to partake, as I would never force anyone to partake with my beliefs, then all's good. So that was the big thing. So a lot of people did say, oh, well, this opens up a door for forcing businesses to make cakes for gay weddings and all this other stuff. And I said, listen, if you have a private business and you don't want to make the cake and the courts say that, like, you know, this is all other stuff, but on the base value of if somebody's going to want to get married and if that offends somebody so much that they're paying attention to the wrong thing, if you ask me.
Yes, you and I are on the same page on that. And I would say to some Republicans, it's like, look, if you want to keep losing, this is one of those things that will keep you losing because, man, you got to get with the times. If people want to get married and they're in a committed relationship, they need to be able to get married. But let's move on to Cocaine Mitch McConnell. Holy cow, man. I don't know. I mean, this guy, I mean, he must have a pretty strong arm. I mean, people were saying it's like, hey, let's postpone the vote. And I think they were even Marco Rubio, who I got to say, I'm not a huge fan of. Even he was saying, hey, we should wait on this, but they didn't. Now we got Mitch McConnell who hamstrung us on this recent election. I mean, if the Republican Party is going to get its act together, they can't keep doing stuff like this because this is just going to guarantee more of the same. And I do not like it.
Yeah, then this is kind of what we're talking about here when we say like the different bills that pass. Like when you look at the leadership, we're looking back through history, and I'm not trying to judge somebody on their age, but we're looking back through history, and the party right now is in a point where it has to have some form of pivot and go back to a certain, like there's all these different nuances built in. And Mitch McConnell is not the answer, and he has not been the answer. He's old school rhino who's been there forever, and he just wants to keep power. And this is, we keep playing the same game. And when you step back and you look at the government and you see the people that are holding leadership power or have office sometimes, and you say, I remember when I was a kid and I thought these people had to be smart, but that is not the case. We find the same old politics, the same old power grab, the same old corruption. And we see the younger people moving away from Mitch, and they don't even wait for the election to be fully done yet. And that's an interesting one. So when will we move on from Mitch? I guess maybe when he hits 175 years old.
Oh my God. And you know, you mentioned that pivot. Well, that's a thing they don't want because we were kind of going that pivot. First with the Tea Party, there was some influence there. And then with this, with the MAGA movement with Trump. And I'm not saying that you have to buy into it all, but those to me are times that there was a pivot that was trying to occur, but the establishment portion of the Republican Party, of the RNC, they don't want that. They want a continuance of their group continuing on. So they really, you know, that pivot, which needs to happen, they are postponing and putting off as long as it will happen. I think eventually it does have to happen, or the party just loses relevance. But they are going to put it off as long as they can.
Yeah. And, you know, the one thing that you always see is they want to keep power. They will let certain races go without support.
Yes.
As we've seen, they would rather lose the presidency at this point than have an outsider, whether it's Trump or anyone 100%. Else. that believes in term limits and believes in ending corruption, because the one thing about Democrats and Republicans that are establishment and that are really deep in that establishment, the one thing they both love and they have bipartisan feelings on is how to keep that power and corruption going in their benefit. And somebody like Trump, hate him, love him, whatever it is, he is somebody that says, I really believe we need term limits, and that shakes Washington to the core, because then you're taking away the career, and it should never be a career. You should never be in there for 40 years, and you should never come out a multimillionaire.
It's funny because, you know, at one point in my life when I would hear the idea of the uniparty, I'm like, come on, man, surely these people have more character than that. But I've just realized, no, that's the way it works. And it's like, if I'm a hardcore Democrat and you're a hardcore Republican, and you and I, you know, we get on television and we do our little dance, you know, and we talk back and forth to each other. But then at the end of the day, we both go to the country club and have dinner and all that. It's like, no, they're looking out for each other. It's like, you know, John and I disagree on this, but we agree on all of this. And I want both of us to stay in this cozy situation for as long as we possibly can. You said something that is so true. It's like, it should have never been a career option.
Yep, it shouldn't. And this is something that they say when in the fight business, so like in the UFC or any type of fight thing, when Conor McGregor was fighting Floyd Mayweather and they were having all that feud back in 2017, and then like some pictures would come out and there were like rumors that they flew on the same plane at one point to the next location. And everyone said, yeah, as much as they hate each other, they love each other, because the amount of millions that are coming in is through the roof. So the hate, it might be there, but at the end of the day, the Republicans, Democrats want to keep their power. They want to keep the establishment. They don't want outsiders, and they want their money.
And this Mitch McConnell guy, I mean, and he's already got plenty of money. I mean, I don't know how many hundreds of millions of dollars this guy's worth, but his wife has that big shipping company, I think. But anyway, no, I'm not happy to see him back around. I mean, we got rid of Nancy a little bit, but we get to keep Mitch to kick around a little bit. John, thank you so much for the segment. We're going to be joined in just a moment by Ann Vandersteel, who is coming to help us out. My name is Michael Parker. This is the program per usual. And I hope that you like what we're doing. It's like I try to bring you guys new and different stuff all the time. And there was a story that I was looking for the other day. Well, one thing about the stray missile that we'd been talking about, I'm very glad that that turned out not to be what was initially being reported, that it did not come from Russia. And even though I reported it on 2 days ago, that was the information that I had from the legacy news, and I wanted to bring it to you. Well, it still looks like that was not the case. It wasn't a Russian missile, and this will help us kind of step away from the craziness of a possible Article 4 escalation via NATO. So that is a huge relief, because we don't need to go down that road. And I still hold out hope that perhaps George Webb's belief that somehow, somewhere behind the scenes, that a deal is being done to get us out of this. But, you know, I don't know, and I don't have a great deal of evidence that that's what's happening, but I do hope that's what's happening, because I would like to think that we're not going to go into the new year with a continuance of this situation. So we'll continue to follow that. Of course, Zelensky, as one of our commenters said earlier, you know, he still wants as much help as he can get from the U.S., and this does get very complicated now that we've got the FTX wrinkle inside of this that tends to look like some kind of a money laundering operation, where we give money, well, FTX gives money to the DNC, Democratic candidates, they elect to give money to Ukraine then invests money back into FTX. So this is really complicated, and hopefully we will get to the bottom of that. You guys, we're going to go ahead and take that break. We'll be joined in just a second by Ann Vandersteel. This is the program.
TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Kyrie Irving was suspended by the Brooklyn Nets of the NBA after he did not apologize. He shared a clip on his social media from a film called Hebrews to Negroes, Wake Up Black America. Contains numerous anti-Semitic tropes. Irving apologize, quote unquote, after he was suspended without pay for five games. But this is the fifth game. And by the way, the fifth game is tonight. He's not playing. And guess what? The Nets have won 3 out of 4 without Kyrie Irving. But it's heating up again for various reasons. And I've never seen high-profile people coalesce around a man who committed a despicable anti-Semitic act. But that's what's happening. Los Angeles Lakers superstar, or whatever you want to call him, LeBron James, says that he believes Kyrie Irving's suspension should end immediately and he should be allowed to play. He tweeted, "I told you guys I don't believe in sharing hurtful information, and I'll continue to be that way. But Kyrie apologized, and he should be able to play. That's what I think. It's that simple. Help him learn, but he should be playing. What he's asked to do to get back on the floor, I think, is excessive, in my humble opinion. He's not the person that's being portrayed of him. Anyways, back to my rehab session." Oh, okay, great.
Steve Malzberg on TNT Radio.
This is a message for the parents of young children in the United States. I am Dr. Tess Laurie from the World Council for Health. Please consider the danger of vaccinating your children and babies with the COVID-19 injections. They are not the same as traditional vaccines and are causing significant harm to children around the world. Your children have their whole lives ahead of them. They are not endangered by COVID at all. Please hear us when we say, for your children, it is much safer to wait. Thank you.
Silence for thinking differently? Silence for thinking differently. Not here. Silence for asking questions? Not here. Not here. Silence for discussing the other side of the story? Not on TNT Radio. Join the conversation anytime. Search TNT Radio on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Getter, or Gab. Download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk, TNT Radio.
All righty, folks, we got everything sorted out. We are joined this hour by Ann Vanderstil, and I appreciate Ann coming on the show. Ann, thank you so much for doing this, and welcome to the show.
Great to be with you. I was listening to your segment prior to commercial, and talking about the Ukraine money laundering. You know, honestly, I think crime pays, because coming out right now on November 30th, the New York Times, are you ready for this? The New York Slimes is scheduled to host a live event with FTX's SBF, Sam Bankman-Fried, the president of Ukraine, Zelensky, Zuckerberg, and Janet Yellen. All these folks are going to be there in their own speaking engagement and panels, et cetera. Of course, I'm sure that the good patriots of this country are going to run to that event and spend $2,500 to attend. No, I don't think so. But this is, this is what we're up against.
I saw that today, and I was like, this is clear. Tell me this is a joke or something, because, I mean, can you imagine? They surely are not going to have at least Sam on. First of all, the whole panel is a rugged group to look at, but surely they're not going to still let that guy on there.
Well, I mean, isn't he still in the Bahamas sort of vacationing, or is he being held? Is he going to be escorted in shackles to this event? I mean, how is that exactly going to go down? The whole thing is insane right now. It's insane.
Exactly. There was a photo of him yesterday. You know, he's just hanging out. He was in a grocery store. I mean, it's ridiculous. But you know what? Ann, tell us a little bit about yourself, because this is your first time on the show, because we got a lot we can still talk about, and we'll definitely talk about this. But tell us about you, and I think you host a show as well.
I do. So I actually host a show called The Zelenko Report.
It's the
sake of Dr. Vladimir Zelenko. I am
Big
one of the co-chairs
here.
Of the Zelenko Freedom Foundation. Yeah, and so super, super excited to be a part of this organization. I've been doing broadcast media for the past 7 years. I had a show called Steel Truth that had a great run, and I interviewed Dr. Zelenko. It was the first interview post-President Trump putting him on blast back in March of 2020, when Dr. Zelenko wrote that famous letter that got to the president, and he addressed it at the podium one day during a coronavirus press conference, and he talked about a New York country doctor lauding the efficacy of hydroxychloroquine, azithromycin, and zinc. And that actually was the beginning of the end of the medical industrial complex being able to hide behind their word salads and their sophisticated publications and the lies, basically all the lies. He shined a big light in there. So, you know, we became friends over the last couple of years, and before he passed away, he asked me and Kevin Jenkins, who's a phenomenal human being in the medical freedom space. He's been out stumping for body sovereignty for years with all of the top docs. And so we co-chair the foundation together. It's a great spot to land.
Yes, Kevin has been on the show. He was on here a couple of months ago, and I remember he said that, you know, he was working with Dr. Zelenko. I was a big fan. I went and did the Zelenko protocol per learning about all this. I mean, I had COVID back in August and basically just rolled through it with HCQ and ivermectin.
Right. Exactly. And look, you're still here, right? I mean,
yes,
again, these early
here.
Intervention protocols work. The early intervention works. It's been proven over and over and over again. And now we're seeing, you know, the amnesty requests from mainstream media and all this kind of stuff. Again, I'm not here to slam anybody that was a victim of the fear porn and of the lies that they published, because it was incredible brainwashing that's been going on. The MK Ultra around COVID was extraordinary. And the fear. Look, we all succumb. I was scared in the beginning. I remember my daughter wanting to go to the store in February, and I freaked out in 2020. I was like, what are you doing? You can't go to Walmart. We're going to bring something home, because we didn't know what was going on. We just had no idea. And then by March, I'm like, you know, something's not right here. This something's not right. And then we heard Trump on the podium. I said, all right, we're going to look into this. And sure enough, the rest is history. We now know this is like the capitulate. This is the sort of the pinnacle of lies, you know, the biggest lie of all. And now they just feel they have impunity because they can steal elections. And look what's going on in Germany. They're upset. Yes. They're going to redo their election. Brazil is rioting. Arizona's about to go off. I'm going to head back down there probably this weekend, because they're going to start to assemble by the hundreds of thousands, because they know their election was stolen. It's all about controlling the population, right? And this is what I think the public is waking up to. It's kind of an exciting time.
It is exciting times. I'm glad you're going to Arizona, because that's not, I think, I'm not going to give away your location, but I think you're on the East Coast, right?
I'm on the East Coast. Currently, I'm actually in Denver. Tomorrow, I am sitting in a hearing on a trial where some folks in the military have taken to court the Secretary of State Austin, Health and Human Services Secretary Xavier Becerra, and FDA Commissioner Michael Califf over the poison death shots, essentially. And it's a very interesting case. Attorney Todd Callender, who is with Truth for Health Freedom, his family actually introduced the needleless patch back in the 90s to Pfizer. And it was a wildly successful way drug delivery system, a needleless patch. And within a few years, I guess his family recognized what Pfizer was about and their evil. So he switched teams quickly and has been fighting for medical freedom for a long time. But this case, he's going to be arguing in front of a 3-judge bench at the Denver Appellate Court tomorrow, where I will be in support of his efforts from the Zelenko Freedom Foundation, offering and lending support. He's arguing the 13th and 14th Amendments are being violated. And here's the premise of the case. This is really interesting. These shots have mRNA technology, and that is technology that changes your DNA. It uses a CRISPR sequencing tool that will change your DNA. So if the patent holder of the mRNA technology, like Moderna or Pfizer, for instance, gets that shot injected into your body and your DNA changes, you are no longer you. Klaus Schwab said that that's in fact what was going to happen from the World Economic Forum. So does that mean you're property of the patent holder? This is what he's arguing in front of this bench. He has 15 minutes. Todd lives down in the Bahamas. He's an expat, and he's lived down there for 25 years, and he flew all the way up to Denver. So I said, I was in Phoenix earlier this week, and I was watching what was going on down there. So I bopped up here to support Todd, because I think this is a landmark case, and if he can get through that hearing and get a trial, this is going to be extraordinary. This is one of a kind. One of a kind.
This is really interesting and disturbing. I had on Dr. Peter McCullough last week, and we were talking about some information that it appears that, you know, DARPA and the Department of Defense was working with Moderna as far back as 2011 on this.
Correct.
And that it looks like really, you know, Moderna and Pfizer are just kind of the front people for this. They get to make all the money, but really this was coming out of DOD and DARPA.
Absolutely. Well, what have we learned? You know, I was removed off LinkedIn back in April of 2020 because I was putting up the patents that showed Pierre Bright, Burroughs Wellcome, The Crown, the Rothschilds, Bill Gates Foundation was all in on SARS-CoV-2, the bioweapon variety, the one where they had spliced in HIV, malaria, and other lovely you know, bioweapon-esque, gain-of-function-esque material. And, you know, those patents were going back a long time. And, of course, we knew that hydroxychloroquine, when Dr. Zelenko put it on blast, hydroxychloroquine had been studied by the NIH in 2003, and it was very efficacious in treating coronaviruses of the garden variety. So we knew this. It also treated the flu. And, of course, that's the first thing Fauci said when Trump brought it up back day that day in March of 2020. He basically pushed Trump off the podium and said, well, we have to do a double-blinded placebo-controlled trial before we can say that hydroxychloroquine is going to be good for coronavirus or COVID-19. That was a lie. You know, everything they've done is a lie. It's shocking.
Yeah, and you may remember this, and I think this would have been, because I was trying to remember the exact date the other day during a conversation, but I think it was around May or June of 2020. But in Nevada, Sisolak allowed the prison system there to buy, I can't even remember how many tablets of HCQ, but they were buying it, you know, for their prison community. The reason I bring this up is because you and I couldn't get HCQ, but there were portions of the system that knew this stuff worked. They bought it because they had large captive communities that they needed to take care of. And that was 2020.
Yeah, that's right. This has been an ongoing battle. This has been, it's been a shell game of hiding the essential, you know, medicines from the American public. In fact, they took HCQ, which was over-the-counter in France in January of 2020, and they put it, they made it a prescription because they also knew what was coming. So this has been a well-orchestrated, hit job on humanity. It's genocide in progress. They're still trying to genocide us, and now they're, you know, now the global elite, the cabal, recognizes that the people are waking up around the world, and they're seeing that their God-given freedoms have been stolen everywhere. The Americans are seeing it in short order, what's happened here with these elections. They're really starting to figure it out, which is very exciting, but it's also detrimental to the cabal, and that's why you're seeing things like, you know, the next public health emergency of international concern. Ebola has now been spotted potentially in a UK hospital. So they shut this part of the hospital down last night. And, you know, I think what they're doing, because these Ebola cases are popping up everywhere, I think that's going to be a hemorrhagic fever. There's going to be a biolab leak. I mean, it's going to be the same playbook because they don't have an original thought. But they've got a lot of, billions of dollars invested around the world in these biolabs, in the gain-of-function technology, in weaponizing natural God-given viruses that are just out there that have been, you know, let's face it, our immune system can battle this stuff, but they've weakened us with everything they can possibly throw at us, from chemtrails on the planet to our food, to our water, to 5G, to the, you know, just everything is toxic right now. Your immune system is compromised. So if you give them something like hydroxychloroquine, or you give them something that includes amino acids that builds your T cells back up, like NAC, they want to take it off the market because they don't want your God-given immune system to be at peak performance, because they want you to succumb to whatever they have decided that is going to be the way they're going to remove you, or torture you, or make you an annuity for the pharmaceutical industry so you have to constantly be on their medication. It's a very, very sick cycle that we're in, and we've got to stop and get out.
Well, you know what? And I remember months ago, late May, early June, whatever it was, you know, all of a sudden, you know, we had the monkeypox. Monkeypox was the new thing, and a lot of people did get it, you know, within a particular community. But it's like, I don't hear anybody talking about monkeypox now, and it's just, so when you bring up Ebola, it's like, well, let's just keep rolling them out, I guess, until one sticks.
That's pretty much it, and I think that's what they're trying to do between actually sending the stuff around the world. You know, Colorado actually set up triage centers in the airport here in Denver. And I flew into Colorado last night, so I was like, this is going to be interesting. I didn't see anything because I got in late, and I was fixated on getting to a hotel and getting to bed because it was about midnight. But, you know, the thing is, the mainstream media is carrying the water for the global elites, and they weaponized the medical-industrial complex. And it's a coordinated attack, fifth-generation warfare coming at us from a bioweapon perspective to the media to regulatory. Everything is being weaponized against the free people because they're trying to, you know, push us back into our homes and lock us down. And they're scared of what's coming because we clearly now know. I was in Arizona. I saw what went down over this election, and it was as if somebody was raped, shot, and murdered all at the same time, right in broad daylight. It was that bad and that obvious what they did with this election. I mean, these ballots that were printed two different sizes so that they would not work in the machine, and they brought the machines to a grinding halt. Come on. That was the hack. I mean, it's blatantly obvious, and they expect that we're going to accept this.
Yeah, no, that's going to happen. So I want to return to that in our second segment, because we've got I want to talk about Arizona and the election. My producer just sent me two things before we go to this break. It says, because he's down in Australia, and he sent me an article from The Guardian and also from the Star Observer. Listen to these headlines. More monkeypox jabs arrive in Australia to boost vaccination. I guess this is before a gay pride event. And then I see he sent me another article that says Australia receives over 40,000 doses of monkeypox vaccine. Wow, there you go. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back in just a couple minutes.
The midterms, and America has voted. With his expert analysis, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Sometimes fire is cleansing and productive. Gold and other precious metals are refined in fire. Sometimes fire clears out detritus and enables new growth. When forests aren't meddled with, regular fires clear out undergrowth, return nutrients to the soil, and open up space for new trees to grow. Indeed, bristlecone pines require exposure of their pine cones to fire before they will release their seeds. Such can be the case in politics, too. Due to voter apathy and laziness, Congress has been allowed to become sclerotic with an accretion of octogenarians who have thrived by gaming the system in their favor. But their greed might have sparked the wildfire known as the FTX scandal to race through both houses of Congress and both political parties. The cleansing can't come too soon. It's never the conservatives, the Freedom Caucus Republicans, who get caught with their hands in the cookie jar. FTX might just be the best way to clear the decks of Republicans who would rather lose than fight for we the people and our republic. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Several world leaders and notable multinational corporations now actively promote an energy transformation to so-called clean green hydrogen. Mainstream media will not expose the facts on the hydrogen fuel alternative. Hydrogen is an energy carrier, not an energy source. It requires enormous energy from another source to create it. And this storage of energy in hydrogen is very expensive. It can be compressed or stored chemically at a higher density, such as in metal hydrides. But this is all resource intensive. If you want higher energy bills, hydrogen will help. If you want higher costs of living, hydrogen will help. And burning hydrogen in air is not so environmentally friendly. It may produce emissions with up to 6 times higher levels of toxic nitrogen oxides compared with burning natural gas.
A cashless society means zero cash. No car boot sales, no markets, no tooth fairy or piggy banks, no saving cash for a rainy day, no buying anything with privacy. Digital currency means every cent you receive will be recorded and every transaction tracked. Lighting the fuse for freedom, TNT Radio.
I got another message during the break, and this is coming from the New York Times. It says, last call for the monkeypox vaccine van. I guess they're sending that van around outside of clubs for people to still get the old shot there. Anne Vandersteel is my guest, and I really appreciate her helping me out like this. So, Anne, you're headed down to Arizona now, and so, yeah, let's get back to this, because I was very excited for the Arizona race, and Carrie Lake is, to me, a person that I think that we needed, because she's not afraid of anything. She speaks her truth, and she knows how to communicate, which I wanted very much. Well, so what happens? People show up to vote, and the tabulators don't work. There's these kinds of issues. Their one job was to have those machines working and ready for people to do their civic duty and right, which is to vote in their local elections, and that didn't happen. So you are headed down there in a couple of days, returning there. Yeah, tell me what it looks like on the ground and what people said to you.
So, it's fascinating, because I was down there. I flew in on Sunday. I was there Monday and Tuesday. I got to spend Monday with Senator Wendy Rogers, who's beloved in Arizona, as well as Representative Mark Fincham, who was running for Secretary of State. And what we saw with a slate of Republican candidates was really interesting. First of all, Carrie Lake, top of the ticket as the governor, is neck and neck with Katie Hobbs. If you look at their social media profiles, it tells you all you need to know. Carrie Lake has got 500,000 people on Twitter. Yeah. Katie Hobbs has 6,000. Same thing on Truth Social. I mean, it's very disparate. It's like going to a Trump rally versus a Biden rally inside of a gymnasium with six circles that aren't even all filled up. It's completely the same story. You have Secretary of State Mark Fincham versus Adrian Fontes, who's already had legal problems with the law. Fincham is squeaky clean, a great MAGA candidate. Of course, he and Carrie Lake, endorsed each other. We also saw Abe Hamadeh, and of course, Blake Masters. So you would think if somebody's pulling the lever for ours, they're just pulling straight down. But the disparity between the percentage differences of candidates, with Carrie Lake and Katie Hobbs being within a half a point of each other versus Mark Fincham being double digits, makes no sense. People don't vote that way. And especially the amount of people that came out in Arizona, the polls were overwhelmed. There's that. The hack I told you about, having two different sized pieces of ballot paper the day of, was a 19-inch ballot versus the day before testing at a 20-inch ballot. So the skews were all off, and the marker, little ovals didn't match up in the optical character scanning engine, the OCS engine. So there's that. Then, of course, we have reports of my good friend Michael Yon and Ben Berkwin being with Real America's Voice, and Michael Yon is a really phenomenal war correspondent. I've traveled with him a bunch. He and Ben were a hot pursuit of box trucks going down to Runbeck prints the ballots. And this is, during the counting week after the election. So clearly they're trying to water down ballots, because what happened day of, when all those ballots got adjudicated because the ballots weren't working in the machine due to the different size paper, all those ballots were supposed to be kept in a very, in a separate drawer, but that drawer was overflowing due to the amount of adjudicated ballots. So they basically broke that chain of custody by opening that drawer and emptying that drawer numerous times during the day. Then those ballots got mixed in with other ballots that were not supposed to be adjudicated. So the whole election is fraud. Like I said, it's as if they murdered somebody in broad daylight and expect you to go, oh, nothing happened, nothing to see here, keep going. Arizonans aren't having any of it. There's people that are already starting to organize and assemble. I think that state's going to go off in a peaceful way, not in a violent way, but in a peaceful way. And they're going to show up and go, we don't accept this. Carrie Lake is not conceding. Mark Fincham is not conceding. Nobody should concede on that Republican ticket over there, because it was blatant, blatant fraud. So, I'm going to go back, because, this is history and this is how we take our country back. It's got to come from the bottom up. It's got to come from we the people, which really is top down. If you want to be more accurate, we are the government. We are sitting on top. And the servants do what we say. Right now, we don't have that happening, but we're gonna drive that home. And I think in the next couple of weeks, until we get what we want, which is a real re-election again, we're gonna do this over and get it right.
I read today that in the state of Pennsylvania, Delaware County, I had on Greg Stenstrom and Leah Hoops, who had written a book about what they witnessed in Delaware County of Pennsylvania in 2020. And they were both on my show on different times in the past couple of weeks, right before the midterm. Well, guess what? The same thing has happened again in that particular county, where they absconded into a private room, some of the people running that particular county's race, with the V drives and some of the ballots. So it happened all over again. These guys went out and wrote a book about it, tried to get the word out. The same thing happened all over again. So I'm going to get them back on the show too. But at some point, I mean, I think everybody knows that this is going on. And the question is like, how long will we accept it and comply to it? Because as long as we don't push back, they're going to keep doing it. And, the next 2-year cycle just started. So this is going to be a long 2 years as we go towards this major race that's coming up. And Republicans are going to have to get tough, and we're going to have to encourage them peaceably, man, to quit being wimps and deal with this situation. We have to have electoral integrity. This is what the whole nation's built upon. And otherwise, we will not have legitimate elections again.
You're right. I'm going to take it one step further. I'm going to talk about the retrolution. And what do I mean by a retrolution? I mean, we need to go retroactively back to our roots. So let's just get our history. Let's get on the same page when it comes to the facts of the history of our country, because that too is a lie. We've been fed a narrative. I mean, our generation, the generation before us, we've been fed a narrative. And this is the truth of the matter. When our country, when we declared our independence and we won the Revolutionary War, we were in debt. Okay, we owed the French about 6 million livres, or just call it dollars to make it simple. We owed them money. But when that debt came due and we didn't know how we were going to pay for it, what does every country do? What have we always done when debts are due and the money is, we don't have the money? We start another war. So yeah. We had another war. We got to war with Great Britain. Then we had the Civil War. So it's like we get into this debt war cycle, right? And here's the thing. We had a union of states. By the time the Civil War was over, we had 23 states in the union, and it was about readmitting the states back to the union. But the linchpin was they wanted to make us the United States as opposed to independent nation states, that of which we were. So you were a national of the state of Virginia or the state of Florida or the state of New York or whatever. But instead, in order to ratify in the 14th Amendment, they wanted to make you a U.S. citizen. Well, that and two states recognized the problem with that, New Jersey and Ohio. They balked at the idea. They said, no, we don't want to become part of the United States. We're New Jersey and we're Ohio. We want to stay that way. We want to be a union, and we'll fund a government for our national defense, but we don't want to be part of your organized whatever this is. Well, they were basically told, if you don't do this, you can't be readmitted. And then they actually usurped powers and replaced people inside state legislators and had them sign this as ratification under duress. So that's really fraud. The 14th Amendment made you a U.S. citizen. We were electing our public servants up until the 14th Amendment. We had elections. We elected people to go to represent us in our state governments. We had all that. The 14th Amendment gave you the benefit of voting. It wasn't a right. We already had the right to elect. Now you have a 14th Amendment benefit to vote. And that benefit comes with liabilities, as we know now, right? So that's 1868. In 1871, the Act of 1871 incorporated the United States, which is the 10 square miles of Washington, D.C. But because we were already citizens, U.S. citizens, we all became municipal servants. We became corporate employees, taxpayers, shareholders, okay? In 1871, you know what else what happened? The bar was formed. The British Accredited Registry was formed. That all of that comes together into this story that we're in right now with this public-private partnership nightmare and all of these for-profit organizations like the CDC, the FDA, the NIH, the DOD, the military-industrial complex, all of it is built around this corporate construct. And you, with your birth certificate, have been made a trustee of a straw man of a fictional entity, which is not you, the living man. So this is the problem we have right now in this country, and people don't understand the history. We can correct this. And we can fix this, and we can restore the integrity of true public servants in our government. But, you know, the fact of the matter is we're in this cycle right now where we just want to keep fighting for our right to vote, when in fact we should be fighting for our right to elect, because electors have more weight than voters. And, again, this is an education process that our country needs to learn. And I have people from all over the country and all over the world asking me to help. In fact, Epoch Times has an article coming out that they're featuring me in the next couple of weeks, specifically about this subject and the true history. And we're going to walk people through the process, because you can't fix 2020 if you don't really fix what happened in 1868. If we're going to fix 2020, we got to go back to the root of the problem. This is what created the corporate, private, the public-private partnerships and the corporate constructs. And people don't know it. They just don't know it.
Listen, I'll be honest. I didn't know this until probably, I don't know, 7-8 years ago. And somebody sent it to me at first. I was like, are you sure about this? Because I was doing another show for another channel, and they sent it to me, and it caught me off guard. So it's, you know, there's a lot of people that do not know this. And I would love to have you back on when that article comes out, because, yeah, we'll make a whole episode on it and let you lay it out again in tandem with the article.
Oh, I'd be happy to. You know what? It sounds very complex. But at the end of the day, it's common sense. It goes from being complicated, because, again, the government has made everything very complicated with their corporate ordinances, codes, and statutes, right? But that's legal. We are lawful. We are to obey the law of the land. Remember, this goes back to the biblical principles, Genesis 1:26, right? God created the earth and gave us dominion over the land, the air, and the water, L-A-W, that's your law. So man is to stand on the common court of the land, right? We're supposed to stand on the common law, which is the law of the land. Admiralty law is the law of commerce. Back in the days, commerce was done over ships going across the water. That's admiralty law. And then ecclesiastical law of the air, is the trust law. So what these lawyers, bar 1871, the year we were incorporated, what they've done is they've, you know, conflated trust law and admiralty law, and they've drug us into the water with this corporate fiction by creating your straw man, all caps name, and birth certificate, and now your social security number is the contract to work with the commercial entity of the United States. So that's your straw man corporate fictional debt entity, being contracted with the United States corporation. So what you need to do is claim your straw man, turn that into a beneficiary relationship as opposed to you being the trustee with a liability. You flip the script, you claim your birth certificate, and you put your Social Security number to rest, and now you're standing on the law of the land as a living man. And this is, in fact, what they've done, but nobody seems to fully understand it because they've made it complicated. Well, we can uncomplicate it, and we can all move on and essentially stand up the vacated seats back in 1868 when they created this corporation. All those seats that were Republic seats, Republic of Texas, Republic of whatever, those seats are vacated right now. We can now go ahead and elect the governor of Florida, or the Republican governor of the governor of the Republic of Florida, and we can fill that seat. And DeSantis could be a great choice if he wants to, you know, basically terminate the corporation of the state of Florida, because every state's a corporation now, every county, every city, et cetera, et cetera. So we've got to get out of this corporate public-private partnership and return to a de jure real government.
And Vandersteel, I like this. I've thoroughly enjoyed this, and I'm very fortunate that you came on the phone. So thank you so much. We will be having you back, man. Give them hell in Colorado and in Arizona. I will look forward to talking to you again. How do they find you on the net?
Head on over to zfreedomfoundation.org. Zfreedomfoundation.org. We got a great benefit coming up that we need support in March, and we've got some educational series, and my email is right there. So if you go to zfreedomfoundation.org, send me an email.
All right. Thank you so much, Anna. I appreciate it. Ladies and gentlemen, wow, that was an interesting show today. My name is Michael Parker. This is Deep Program. We're going to roll up the windows, lock the doors, get out of here. Thank you to my producers. Thank you to TNT. And thank you most of all to you for listening. This is Who It's For, man. Stay free, y'all. I'll catch you tomorrow.